Society needs to wake up and say enough's enough. Separate does not mean equal.
It makes little difference that as governor, I am gay.
I don't think we're fighting for same-sex marriage. We're not fighting for gay marriage. What we're fighting for is equality in marriage itself.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Couples equality is null in Australia and void in California. New Jersey's governor comes out, fesses up, and steps down. And a queer legal hero explains why marriage matters. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 14, 2004. The Australian Senate this week approved the government's bill to exclusively define marriage as between a man and a woman. This will also deny legal recognition to marriages of gay and lesbian couples performed in other countries. Despite internal division on the issue, the opposition Australian Labor Party joined the governing coalition to give the measure more than 85% Senate support. Although a similar bill was already passed by the House, the Senate had previously sent it to a committee for study. That committee has already received more than 12,000 public comments and is scheduled to report in October. But once the government agreed to split off its effort to ban legal recognition of adoptions granted to same-gender couples, especially by other countries, Labor was ready to affirm its support for hetero-exclusive marriage, as its spokesperson on legal issues announced to a religious right group last week.
That sparked heated debate in this week's Labor caucus, which had not been consulted before the announcement. While the caucus ultimately voted for a third time to reject same-gender marriages, there was also a small victory there for lesbi-gay constituents. Party leader Mark Latham formally proposed a Labor position to examine options to achieve more consistent national treatment of all de facto relationships, which was also approved. Openly lesbian Labor senator from South Australia Penny Wong nonetheless criticized the bill eloquently on the floor, denouncing the government for exploiting prejudice to win elections, and declaring that nobody has a monopoly on commitment and love. Nobody has the right to judge the worth of another person's relationships.
And when openly gay Democrat from West Australia Brian Gregg proposed an amendment to the bill to ensure that it would not prohibit other means to recognize same-gender relationships, Labor joined the governing coalition to defeat it, even though Gregg's amendment was identical to one a Labor member had proposed in the House.
The Senate took the unusual steps of extending its hours and limiting debate in the government's rush to enact the marriage ban before the legislature's two-week recess. The government is expected to call for federal elections in a matter of weeks.
While the ruling coalition and the religious right cheered the marriage restriction as a victory for Australian values, lesbi-gays and transgenders were outraged. Several hundred demonstrated in Sydney protesting the Senate vote and Labor's role in it, while a smaller group had demonstrated in Hobart earlier. Lesbi-gay groups are considering a legal challenge.
Openly gay Green Party senator from Tasmania Bob Brown was concerned for same-gender couples who have married abroad. He said, "I've got friends in this position. Now is their marriage valid or not? What's going to happen? Are people going to arrive and say, 'Where's your marriage certificate? Give it to us. We're going to rip it up.'"
Similar questions may be in the minds of more than 4,000 couples who married in San Francisco earlier this year. Exactly 6 months after the first of those licenses were issued at the behest of Mayor Gavin Newsom, the California State Supreme Court has declared them null and void. Since the court was careful to avoid deciding the constitutionality of the state's hetero-exclusive marriage law, it did not actually have to take that action at this time. But a majority of five believe that letting the marriages stand until it does take up the constitutional issue, which could be in 2 years, would prove too confusing. The problem is that a number of the couples have already listed themselves as married on things like deeds and insurance contracts, so the confusion is already there. The two dissenting justices took different tacks. Justice Catherine Mikkel Vertigar felt it was wrong to invalidate the marriages because the couples who contracted them had not been represented in the case before the court. Justice Joyce Kennard emphasized the pain it would cause the couples to assert that their weddings were empty and meaningless.
However, the court was unanimous in determining the central issue of the case before it, finding that Newsom had overreached his authority in ordering the licensing of gay and lesbian couples. Newsom had maintained that he felt compelled to do so because he believed the hetero-exclusive law violated both the state and federal constitutions. But the justices agreed that that justification might only apply in a case where no reasonable official could believe the statute is constitutional, and did not find that standard to apply here. Instead, they believed the same-gender couples should have been turned away and advised to go to court to challenge the law. They warned that public officials choosing which statutes to enforce would lead to confusion and chaos.
The state was joined in its move against Newsom by an Arizona-based religious right legal group, the Alliance Defense Fund, which reveled in the decision and especially in the annulment of the marriages. Newsom himself reacted to the ruling, saying,
"I am proud of the people that had the courage to make their way to San Francisco, those San Franciscans that had the courage to stand up on principle and say, I do. Society needs to wake up and say enough's enough. Separate does not mean equal. We're going to fight until the end on this."
Hundreds of gays and lesbians protested in rallies around the state. Among those who had married at San Francisco City Hall and returned there to object to the court ruling, some again donning tuxes and wedding dresses, were Molly McKay and, with his partner John Lewis, Stuart Gaffney.
"I can't take that away from me. It will always be one of the happiest moments of my life."
"Well, in our hearts, it is not void. We have an equally valid marriage in our hearts. And we are just more determined than ever today to struggle forward until it's recognized."
On the same day the California Supreme Court issued its ruling, a politician who has said he does not support equal marriage rights, New Jersey's Democratic Governor Jim McGreevy, told a press conference,
"My truth is that I am a gay American."
With those words, he became the first openly gay governor in the history of the United States. And he declared that,
"It makes little difference that as governor, I am gay. In fact, having the ability to truthfully set forth my identity might have enabled me to be more forthright in fulfilling and discharging my constitutional obligations."
Yet McGreevy went on to announce his resignation, effective on November 15th. The twice-married father of two said,
"I am also here today because shamefully I engaged in an adult consensual affair with another man, which violates my bonds of matrimony. It was wrong, it was foolish, it was inexcusable. I realize the fact of this affair and my own sexuality, if kept secret, leaves me, and most importantly the governor's office, vulnerable to rumors, false allegations, and threats of disclosure. So I am removing these threats by telling you directly about my sexuality."
Although McGreevy's wife Dina stood by him as he spoke, and both she and his first wife continue to support him, the allegations and threats are apparently already in progress. While McGreevy named no names, it's widely believed that the man he referred to is Golan Cepel, who charges the governor sexually harassed him. McGreevy had first appointed Cepel the state's head of Homeland Security. When the legislature questioned Cepel's qualifications, since as an Israeli national he could not himself obtain a federal security clearance, McGreevy made him one of his personal aides. When the legislature inquired as to Cepel's actual duties, rather than respond, McGreevy's office helped Cepel find an even more lucrative private sector position. Recently, McGreevy had contacted the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is looking into his claim that Cepel was attempting to extort $5 million from him in exchange for dropping a harassment lawsuit. Cepel's attorney claims it was McGreevy's representative who volunteered cash in exchange for Cepel's silence, which McGreevy's spokesperson flatly denies.
All this tarnishes McGreevy's accomplishments in 2.5 years as governor, which include progress on tax reform and environmental issues, as well as his contribution to the creation of New Jersey's legal registered partnerships for gay and lesbian couples. Most believe that his formerly promising political career is now over. Although McGreevy selected November 15th as his exit date, some New Jersey Republicans are calling for him to step down immediately. They say he will be unable to govern effectively in the interim, but there's another reason. Due to quirks of New Jersey law, if McGreevy does not step down by September 2nd, the remaining year and a half of his term as governor will be served by the state Senate president, Democrat Richard Cody. If McGreevy leaves before that date, a special election for governor can be called.
And finally, ESPN's cable TV coverage brought controversy last week to the U.S. National Scrabble Championship. In the final round, Trey Wright used the word les. That's a legitimate word under official Scrabble rules, and it was only after Wright had drawn his two replacement tiles that the referee realized it might violate ESPN's rules against offensive language. Because the replacement tiles had already been drawn, the situation required an emergency meeting of the official Scrabble Advisory Board, which unanimously agreed the word is offensive. Ultimately, it was decided that Wright would return his replacement tiles and play a different word, and he went on to win the tournament. His only interest was the point value of the valuable letter Z. As he later told reporters, "Meaning has no consideration when I play."
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 14th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
We'll get a free consult on couples equality from one of the community's leading lawyers later in the program. The August 12th press conference at the State House in Trenton, New Jersey, was a wrenching amalgam of the personal and the political. 47-year-old Governor James McGreevy admitted that it was arguably too late to have this discussion, but that the time to come out had arrived. It was also time, because of a pending scandal McGreevy declined to detail, to tender his resignation. That scandal, far from the first to rock McGreevy's administration, involves sexual harassment charges being made by an unqualified male aide the governor had hired for a high-paying position. However, it was the poignancy of McGreevy's statement rather than the seamy side of the story that stole the headlines. McGreevy began his prepared remarks by proclaiming that he had been grappling with his own identity throughout his life.
As a young child, I often felt ambivalent about myself. In fact, confused. By virtue of my traditions and my community, I worked hard to ensure that I was accepted as part of the traditional family of America. I married my first wife, Carrie, out of respect and love. And together, we have a wonderful, extraordinary daughter. Carrie then chose to return to British Columbia. I then had the blessing of marrying Dina, whose love and joy for life has been an incredible source of strength for me. And together, we have a most beautiful daughter. Yet, from my early days in school until the present day, I acknowledged some feelings, a certain sense that separated me from others. But because of my resolve, and also thinking that I was doing the right thing, I forced what I thought was an acceptable reality onto myself. A reality which is layered and layered with all the, quote, good things and all the, quote, right things of typical adolescent and adult behavior. Yet, at my most reflective, maybe even spiritual level, there were points in my life when I began to question what an acceptable reality really meant for me. Were there realities from which I was running? Which master was I trying to serve? I do not believe that God tortures any person simply for its own sake. I believe that God enables all things to work for the greater good. At a point in every person's life, one has to look deeply into the mirror of one's soul and decide one's unique truth in the world. Not as we may want to see it or hope to see it, but as it is. And so my truth is that I am a gay American. And I am blessed to live in the greatest nation with a tradition of civil liberties, the greatest tradition of civil liberties in the world, and a country which provides so much to its people. Yet, because of the pain and suffering and anguish that I have caused to my beloved family, my parents, my wife, my friends, I would almost rather have this moment pass. For this is an intensely personal decision, and not one typically for the public domain. Yet, it cannot and should not pass. I am also here today because, shamefully, I engaged in an adult consensual affair with another man, which violates my bonds of matrimony. It was wrong, it was foolish, it was inexcusable. And for this, I ask the forgiveness and the grace of my wife. She has been extraordinary throughout this ordeal, and I am blessed by virtue of her love and strength. I realize the fact of this affair and my own sexuality, if kept secret, leaves me, and most importantly, the governor's office, vulnerable to rumors, false allegations, and threats of disclosure. So I am removing these threats by telling you directly about my sexuality. Let me be clear. I accept total and full responsibility for my actions. However, I am required to do what is right, to correct the consequences of my actions, and to be truthful to my loved ones, to my friends and my family, and also to myself. It makes little difference that as governor, I am gay. In fact, having the ability to truthfully set forth my identity might have enabled me to be more forthright in fulfilling and discharging my constitutional obligations. Given the circumstances surrounding the affair and its likely impact upon my family and my ability to govern, I have decided the right course of action is to resign. To facilitate a responsible transition, my resignation will be effective on November 15th of this year. I'm very proud of the things we have accomplished during my administration, and I want to thank humbly the citizens of the state of New Jersey for the privilege to govern. Thank you.
That was New Jersey Governor James McGreevy, who came out as a gay man and resigned his office this week.
I'm Roman Kalinin from Moscow. You are listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay on our wavelength.
Here come the brides, so gay with pride. Blissful, triumphant, and tanned by plague lights.
Time magazine calls Evan Wolfson one of the 100 most influential people in the world. As Marriage Project Director for Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund, Wolfson was co-counsel in the historic Hawaii marriage case and appeared before the U.S. Supreme Court in Boy Scouts of America versus James Dale. Now he's the Executive Director of Freedom to Marry, an organization working to win U.S. marriage equality, and the author of a new book on the subject. This Way Out's Chris Wilson talks with Wolfson about why marriage matters.
I guess this book was a long time coming. When did you first become interested in the marriage issue and how it affects gay and lesbian people?
Well, I wrote my third year paper in law school on exactly this question. Why? And I basically argued then, as I believe now, that you can't say you're for equality and then acquiesce in any group's exclusion from the central social and legal institution of our society.
Wow, how long ago was that? Law school, that's with your distinguished career, that might have been a few years ago?
Yeah, well, sadly enough, it was 21 years ago.
Wow, that's a long time before any of the rest of us were talking about it. But I understand you're not crazy about using the term same-sex marriage, which seems to be the headline in all the papers. Why is that?
Right. I don't think we're fighting for same-sex marriage. We're not fighting for gay marriage. What we're fighting for is equality in marriage itself. We want the same protections, the same responsibilities, the same choices that non-gay people have. And one of the main protections that comes with marriage is that common vocabulary of love and dedication, self-sacrifice, family, equality, and that's called marriage.
Hmm. Well, some of the opposition says that their argument is that marriage has existed in its present form for centuries. And I noticed in your book, that's not really true, is it?
Well, not only is it not true for centuries, it's not even true in our own country in the lifetime of many of the people listening to this show. In Why Marriage Matters, I talk about how in our country we've made at least four major changes in the institution of marriage within the last 50 years. We ended, for example, the legal subordination of women. Women who got married used to become the property of their husband. They actually lost their legal identity. That whole Mr. and Mrs. his name thing reflected the legal reality that women lost their legal identity as a separate person. And that was wrong, and we changed it. We ended race restrictions on who could marry whom. And we also ended the government's ability to make decisions about whether people had to stay in a failed or abusive marriage. We also ended the government's ability to go into people who were married's bedroom and decide for them whether or not they could use contraception. So we have made many, many changes in the institution, all in the direction of making it what most Americans believe it is today, a commitment between two people based on love and caring and taking responsibility for one another.
Hmm. But marriage has always been tied up with religion. And so what some people say, even in our own community, hey, what's wrong with the state staying out of it altogether and just giving same-sex partners a civil union or a domestic partnership, as long as that gives us each and every one of the same rights that married couples presently have?
Well, you're actually asking two questions. One is the question about religion, and the second is there some other word or some other thing we could do that would be equal, even if it's not equal? And I addressed both of these in two different chapters of Why Marriage Matters. On the religion point, it's very important for us to make clear that we're struggling here to end discrimination in the legal institution of marriage. We have freedom of religion in our country, and that means that every church, synagogue, mosque, or temple will always be free to decide for themselves whom to marry or not marry. But on the other hand, freedom of religion also means that no religion should dictate to the government who gets a legal marriage license. And just as a Jewish couple cannot walk down to a church and bang on the door and demand to get married, so a Catholic couple who can't get married in their own church because one of them may be divorced is still able to go and get a legal marriage license. There's a difference between civil or legal marriage and religious marriage. And what we're fighting for here is an end to discrimination in legal marriage. The government should not be discriminating in who gets that civil or legal marriage license. And as to the idea that somehow we could just call it something else and it would automatically then be equal, the fact of the matter is there is no other legal system or legal relationship or legal status that provides the full range of protections and responsibilities that come with marriage. Civil union, for example, exists in only one state. And wonderful as that is for the families who live in that state, when they travel or move, they are exposed to a great deal of uncertainty about whether their lawful, committed family relationship is going to be honored or not. And it really comes down to something quite simple. Either civil union or partnership or whatever else you might want to call it is the same as marriage, in which case, why do we need two lines at the clerk's office, and why do we want to say to some people, you come in the front door and the rest of you go around the back? Or they're not the same, in which case the question kind of answers itself, and we shouldn't be treating people unequally.
One of the other arguments that I've heard from opponents is the slippery slope. If we allow two people of the same gender to marry, well, it's only a matter of time till we have group marriage, three people, four people. And my question to you is actually somewhat different. Isn't our reluctance to sanction marriages of more than two individuals based on the same type of discrimination?
Well, not at all. First of all, the question that's on the table here is, what reason does the government have for excluding committed same-sex couples from the legal institution of marriage? What is the reason for this discrimination? Why are we imposing a different sex restriction on people's choice of a marital partner? And it's no answer to that question to try to change the subject to some other question and talk about whatever you want to throw else out there. Now, you know, in America, anyone's allowed to ask any question they want, and that's certainly a very important part about being an American. But the government can't just shift the subject when it's asked, what reason do you have for this discrimination, by trying to bring up some other topic on some other point. And the bottom line here is that what gay people are asking for is the same rights as those given to non-gay people. That is to say, the right to marry a person with whom you're building your life, for whom you're taking responsibility, under the same rules and with the same protections and obligations.
You know, you point out in the book that a lot of the opponents on the other side aren't necessarily the Jerry Falwells. Many of them are good-hearted people that it just makes them queasy. What's the best thing we can do to educate and increase the comfort level of people like that?
Absolutely. I don't believe that everyone who is not yet with us is the dead set against us. I believe that there is a reachable but not yet reached middle whom we must engage. And the absolute key to doing that is helping people to see this as what it really is, a question that involves real families, real people who are actually harmed by this exclusion. And that by contrast, when we end marriage discrimination, we actually help families while hurting no one. The more we make it real, the more we tell our stories, the more we show people the faces and voices of the actual couples, their kids, their loved ones who are affected, and the more we personally put our own personal ask into it, why we care about this, the more we move that fair-minded, reachable but not yet reached middle.
Evan, I want to thank you so much for joining us and telling us about your book. And for our listeners who just tuned in, my guest has been Evan Wolfson, and his book is called Why Marriage Matters. In the few seconds we have to go, Evan, if people wanted to find out more about your book, I'll bet there's someplace on the internet they could probably go.
Well, absolutely. FreedomToMarry.org is our website, and we have information about the book there, and it's also available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and in most independent as well as chain bookstores.
Evan Wolfson was interviewed by This Way Out's Chris Wilson. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Chris Wilson contributed program material. Thanks also to Rita Gonzalez, J.D. Doyle, and Brian Goebel. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Only you can keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs in the bargain, too. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks very much for listening on 5RRR, Woomera, South Australia, Trans FM, Broward County, Florida, KVSC, St. Cloud, Minnesota, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.